Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
It is Free for All Friday here on the Council of Trent podcast, and I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. I've been doing a lot of writing recently. So, in fact, yesterday I was working on my book, Why Catholics Can't Be Socialists, co-authored with Catherine Pakalik, and I was furiously typing through a chapter, and sometimes I just get in the zone, and I'm typing so fast, my fingers start to hurt. And I love when I'm in that zone, because suddenly I look, and several pages, it feels like they just appeared, even though I had had writer's block for quite some time. And when I'm typing, and by the way, I type horribly. I do not do the 10-finger typing. Mavis Bacon was completely unable to teach me how to type. To this day, I've written I'm finishing my 9th book, and I've typed all of them with 2 fingers on a keyboard. I haven't been able to learn any other way, and you know what? I'm still able to maintain a decent typing speed with just 2 fingers. But when I am typing, when I'm writing, I oftentimes have music on in the background. I usually don't have music on when I'm reading and trying to comprehend something, but oftentimes when I'm writing and trying to put something together, I'll have different kinds of music on in the background. Now, some of these things are things that really only I and a few other individuals would appreciate, like remixes of video game themes, usually calming ones, but sometimes more upbeat ones because they're familiar. I find them to be fun and hilarious, and they give me the energy I need to really blast through certain types of writing. Other times, though, I need music that calms me or isn't of the style of techno or something like that. And so I'll put on classical music. Now, I'm not some kind of highbrow individual who would... Now, I'm starting to... That's veering into my Trump impersonation. And it is a tremendous impersonation, let me tell you. But, well, let's see. I guess I could put my glasses up here and have my Chardonnay and put on some of my classical music. Yes. That one's getting into Thurston Howell III from Gilligan's Island. Lovey. He had the teddy bear. You remember the teddy bear? And I forget the name of it. Somebody write into the comments section the name of Thurston Howell III's teddy bear. If you can do it from memory, don't look it up. Lovey. So, but I Masterpiece Theater. I appreciate all different kinds of art, and classical music is something I enjoy, especially having on the background while I'm working, because it really is beautiful. It has a wonderful aesthetic quality to it, and it allows me to relax and just focus on what I'm doing. So here's what I thought would be fun on today's Free for All Friday. I want to share with you my top 7 favorite pieces of classical music. And usually these are the kind of pieces that I will have on in the background when I'm typing. And now probably almost all of these pieces of music you have heard before. I am not a classical music aficionado. I'm not somebody who knows the backgrounds of all of these different composers. I mean, I know a little bit here and there of them and, you know, things that I've picked up along the way. I'm not an aficionado. I just know what I like. And I like this kind of classical music, and you might like it too. And you know what? You might learn a thing or two today. So I hope you enjoy sharing with you, helping us all to become cultured and enjoy the finer things in life. A little throwback there from Sarah, of course, to The Office with the Finer Things Club that Toby started, that Jim tried to join, which he failed miserably at when he couldn't explain the book Angela's Ashes that he didn't read. See, so I love popular things, and I love classical things. I like things that are good. Is that too much to ask for? Before I get to my 7 favorite pieces of classical music, though, I do want to give a big shout out and thank you to our supporters at TrentHornPodcast.com. You make the podcast possible. Consider becoming a supporter for as little as $5 a month. You get access to bonus content. You make the podcast possible. And I think only supporters can comment under the episodes at TrentHornPodcast.com. So if you have a thought about the episodes, or maybe you have a piece of classical music that, hey, it should have made the top 7, Trent, and you are an uncultured swine for not including this, then you can freely leave that there. Or say in nicer terms, I like this one too. Maybe you'll like it as well. Check that all out and more at TrentHornPodcast.com. Now, without further ado, let me talk about my 7 favorite pieces of classical music. But first, I'm going to give an honorable mention to one that didn't make the top 7. I don't usually put it on, you know, when I'm working or I'm writing to have it on in the background, but it's quite beautiful. And being Catholic, I got to have it here, and it's got to be in here in the list. It's here at least as an honorable mention. It's Sui Generis. It's of its own kind. And that, of course, would be Franz Schubert's Ave Maria. So, of course, if you haven't heard it, let me play that for you a little. As This is composed by Franz Schubert in 1825 as part of his Opus 52. It's a setting of seven songs from Walter Scott's popular epic poem, The Lady of the Lake. All right. So let's take that out now a little. All right. So I'm going to play with my faders here to make sure everything is... I love having a soundboard here. I can fade in music there and back. So you know what? Actually, I thought about doing this for the show, and I think I'm going to bring him out right now. So when I was talking about this, I joked about I could approach this episode like the disc jockeys, the DJs do for classical music stations. I love when I'm in my car, like late at night, I'm driving home from somewhere. I'm talking 11, 12 o'clock at night, way past my bedtime, way past my wife's bedtime. Let's say I'm sometimes, here's, you know what? I will confess one of my working habits. I work at all different kinds of hours. I used to do this more, but I've realized now it's not super healthy. I would just go, and if I wanted to get a blitzkrieg of writing done, and I'm in the zone, like 10 o'clock at night, I'll go to this McDonald's down the street. And it's a McDonald's that plays classical music in the lobby, and there's nobody there, and I get my double cheeseburger and my Coke, because there's nothing better than McDonald's Coke. Other Cokes are not the same as McDonald's Coke. And I sit there, I just write, and you know, I'm writing there. And then it's like I'm driving home, and the lobby's still open. It's 11 o'clock, 11:30. Put on the classical music. Don't want to be amped up too much, like K-Bach. I don't think they have a K-Bach station here, but when I was in Arizona, they had K-Bach, the classical music station. And you have these classical music guys. I love how they speak. So I'm just going to pretend I have them here with me. So I'm Modern Trent, and this is Classical Trent, the classical music DJ who spins classical music late at night for people. Thanks for having me, Trent, Modern Trent. And of course, I am Classical Trent, and I'll be here. I guess my voice is a little mixture of a classical music DJ and Jeff Goldblum, and there it is. So let's begin then. We'll go through, Trent, your top seven pieces of music you like. And thank you, Modern Trent. I glad to do that. So I'll let him take you through this, and I'll chime in every now and then when there's something personal that means to me. So Classical Trent, why don't you take over from here? All right, let's do that now then. The number seven piece that we have is Swan Lake by Pyotr Ilyich Tchaikovsky from 1875. Why don't we just play a little bit of this wonderful ballet for you? The story of Swan Lake is about Odette, a princess who, along with several maidens, is turned into a swan by the evil sorcerer Rothbart. By day, the princess and the maidens are swans, and only at night do they return to their human form by the side of an enchanted lake created from the tears of Odette's mother. Rothbart's spell can only be broken if one who has never loved before swears love to Odette forever. Now, don't you just love the mixture of peaceful, gentle calm, but then the harbinger, the threat that emerges closing in on our fair protagonists. Now, let's go move on to Number 6. Number 6 is Carmina Burana by Karl Orff, published in, first composed and performed in 1936. Carmina Burana is a scenic cantata, so unlike the other pieces we will be discussing, this piece includes both a vocal composition along with instrumental performances. The piece is based on Carmina Burana, 24 poems from a medieval 12th century collection. The collection itself is rather bawdy in its work. It is 55 songs of morals and mockery, 131 love songs, 40 drinking and gaming songs, and two longer spiritual pieces. The full Latin title is Carmina Burana Cantiones Profene Cantorabis et Chores Cantate Comitantibus Instrumentis Atque Imaginibus Magicus, or the Songs of Burn, secular songs for singers and choruses to be sung together with instruments and magical images. It was first performed by the Opera, the Frankfurt Opera, on June 8th, 1937. The opening and closing themes to Carmina Burana are the most famous parts of the piece. This part is based off of the medieval poem O Fortuna in the original Carmina Burana collection. If you will let me do you the favor, I'll read you the lyrics along with the piece that Carl Orff has composed for us. So here's how the piece begins. O Fortune, like the moon, you are changeable. Ever waxing, ever waning, hateful life first oppresses and then soothes. Fate monstrous and empty, you were. Now, I do apologize, actually. I've probably not kept up with the Latin lyrics to Carmina Burana, but you get the idea that the poem, this section most people identify as Carmina Burana, is actually O Fortuna, the beginning and opening numbers to Carl Orff's piece. Once again, you're listening to the Council of Trent podcast. I am Classical Trent. At night, I DJ for classical music stations, filling in for him here as he sits off to the side, snickering to himself as I delightfully guide you through the classical music that he enjoys. Let's move on to the fifth piece of Trent's favorite pieces of music. I'll let that introduce itself for you. This piece, of course, is Ride of the Valkyries by Richard Wagner, not Richard Wagner, as some uncultured swines may pronounce his name. No, this is Richard Wagner's 1856 piece, Ride of the Valkyries. It comes from the beginning of Act 3 of Die Walküre, the second of the four operas constituting Richard Wagner's Der Ring des Nibelungen. Its most famous use is probably in the 1979 film Apocalypse Now, when the 19 Air Cavalry Division assaults a North Korean village by helicopter. And we'll play a little bit more to get the sense of the adventure in Richard Wagner's Ride of the Valkyries. So that was Wagner coming in at number five with Ride of the Valkyries, Trent's favorite music to put on in the background to stimulate his work environment. Let's move on now to number four. Number four is Johann Sebastian Bach, Toccata and Fugue in D minor. Let's play that for you. Oops, we still have our Wagner. The Valkyries they're still riding. Don't worry, this happens to me all the time at the classical music station, but I do recover. So let's now play Johann Sebastian Bach number 4, Toccata and Fugue in D minor. toccata comes from the Italian toccare, literally means to touch. According to Wikipedia, it's a virtuoso piece of music, typically for a keyboard or a plucked string instrument, featuring fast-moving, lightly fingered, or otherwise virtuosic passages or sections. And you certainly can see in this toccata the fast-moving plucking or striking of the keys of an organ, with or without imitative or fugal interludes, greatly emphasizing the dexterity of the performer's fingers. That is the toccata, the striking, rapid hitting, noting the dexterity of fingers. Toccata and fugue begins with this wonderful toccata piece. Sounds reminiscent of entering a haunted house, if you will. But then we're also able to enter later on into the piece, into the fugue, and Johann Sebastian Bach is considered the father, the master of the fugue. If you've ever taken a critical theory music class or search for it on YouTube in preparation for this podcast, you would know that a fugue is a musical piece that uses several independent themes that answer and play in counterpoint to one another, but end up forming a harmony with one another. And Johann Sebastian Bach is no doubt considered among classical theorists, classical music aficionados, the master of the fugue. So why don't we play a fugue to give you an example of how a fugue works, that is the interplay of different pieces that stand in harmony with one another. They come in at various lines in the piece, the soprano, alto, tenor, and bass lines, that the fugue begins with a theme, the themed piece of the music that will be repeated, though varied in different ways, to play in harmony with the different lines that are entered in. This is from Bach's Great Fugue in G minor, and I'll let you know when the different lines are coming into the fugue so you can see the interplay. So let's play that for you now. This is the soprano line. Notice that the alto is playing in counterpoint. Now here comes the tenor. And finally the bass. We'll skip right ahead to the end here so you can see them all. You can see them all come back together again. Just delightful, isn't it? Just delightful. Let's continue on. We've now reached, ladies and gentlemen, the top three pieces of classical music that modern Trent enjoys putting on, listening in the background when he's furiously working away. I, of course, am classical Trent filling in for him. Now, here is number three, a favorite of Trent's, because he first saw it in the movie 1940 film Fantasia. And that, of course, is Beethoven's Pastoral Symphony number 6, first composed and published in 1808. This is the first movement. If you enjoy this scene, this is the part of the symphony, the first movement, Allegro ma non troppo, In the 1940 film Fantasia, there's a delightful scene of flying horses with one little black flying horse trying to find his way among the other flying horses. The piece is called Pastoral because it takes place in the rural and countryside. Ludwig von Beethoven enjoyed his walks in rural countrysides to stimulate his imagination, and this piece was a tribute to the beauty that you see in the countryside. On a slightly darker note, this piece also appears in the 1973 dystopic science fiction film Soylent Green. In a future where the world is overpopulated, people are euthanized. The character Saul Roth is euthanized while watching pastoral scenes and listening to this music as he is about to reveal the movie's crucial plot twist, Soylent Green is people. Now let us move on then to the number two piece on the list, and that is going to be Edvard Grieg's In the Hall of the Mountain King, published in 1875. The piece is written as incidental music in the sixth scene of Act Two of Henrik Ibsen's 1867 play, Peer Gynt. The scene is introduced this way. There is a great crowd of troll courtiers, gnomes and goblins. Dovgruben sits on his throne with crown and scepter, surrounded by his children and relatives. Peer Gynt stands before him. There is a tremendous uproar in the hall. A Dovgruben, Do is a Danish word, though spoken in Norway, refers to a mountain range in Norway and an old man. So the title is literally In the Hall of the old man of the mountain range in Norway. The play itself deals with trolls, which is a common bit of folklore in Norway, a film that you might enjoy if you'd like to learn more about that. Well, not to learn more, but part of that folklore is the 2012 film Troll Hunter that takes the Norwegian lore of trolls and brings it into the modern world. So that is number two, In the Hall of the Mountain King. So that was Edvard Grieg's In the Hall of the Mountain King, 1875. And now we reach Trent's number one favorite piece of classical music to have on in the background when he's working or enjoy listening to. Though, actually, before we get to that, we almost left out one thing that many people confuse in the Hall of the Mountain King with the Inspector Gadget theme song from the popular 1990s cartoon. They are not the same. This YouTuber, Evan Lig Fjant, published a video showing that the two themes are actually quite distinct. Let us listen to him.
All right, let's settle this once and for all. This is Hall of the Mountain King. This is Inspector Gadget. Hall of the Mountain King. Inspector Gadget.
That should be helpful for edification. I've just learned that Modern Trent is going to swoop back in here and share with you a little background about why the number one pick is his favorite number one pick. So let us welcome back Modern Trent.
And thank you so much, Classical Trent, for that. You're an upstanding
well put together person. All right. Well, I had a lot of fun with that, pretending, maybe not pretending, maybe I should see if I can get a job at one of the classical music stations, being a late night DJ, just spinning off Bach and Beethoven, Tchaikovsky, Wagner, Stravinsky, all these other people. Who knows? I want to play with you now my number one. I put this on in the background a lot when I'm working because it's really calming for me. And part of it because it's just a nice flashback to a very calming experience I once had in my life. So my number one is Bagatelle number 25 in A minor by Ludwig von Beethoven, published 40 years after his death, though you know it probably by its more famous title, Für Elise. So let me play that to you first in the piano rendition. Just bring that down for you a little bit here. Okay. Now you can see it has a very calming rhythmic quality to it. It's almost like it kind of makes you sway a little bit. So I like having that, though my favorite way to listen to the music, to listen to Für Elise, is actually on classical guitar. So I listen to many of these pieces on, you know, organ, piano, violin, but I love classical guitar is one of my favorite ways to listen to classical music. It's one of the most soothing ways I find to listen to it, to have on in the background. And so this is Michael Lucarelli, and this is his rendition of Für Elise by Beethoven. I'm going to play it just at regular speed and then tell you why I like this piece so much. So here it is by Lucarelli on guitar. So that was Lucarelli. I'm going to rewind that back again. I'm starting to slip into classical Trent now. That's what classical music does to me. Let's just rewind that back a little bit so you can get a note of the chords in their interplay. So here's the reason I like this piece. When my very first job was at Harkins Movie Theaters. So I used to work in the movie theaters, and the very first thing I did was I cleaned the theaters. You know, I took tickets, I worked in concessions, but also we were on rotation. You had to go out and you had to, you know, clean the theater. And this was back in the day when they had no annoying advertisements before and after the movie. It was very calm and very tranquil. And so I'd be cleaning these massive movie theaters, sometimes these auditoriums by myself, shoveling the popcorn. And let me tell you, you want to use a hand sanitizer when you go to the movie theater. But I was, you know, I was 16 years old. And I would just go through, and sometimes I'd be by myself in there, and they would just play this music, this classical guitar. And one of them was Für Elise. And I noticed, though, it was played at kind of a slower speed. So to get an idea of what it was like when I was in the theater doing this, here's Lucarelli again, but it's slowed down. So let me play it for you. So that's the piece when it's slowed down to 75% its normal playback speed. And you can see it's almost haunted, has a haunting quality to it. And that's just always stuck with me. I could always count on that piece of music when I was in there cleaning the theaters, and it just kind of soothed me as I went through shoveling popcorn and drinks and sticky things into bags and making it nice for the rest of you to show up there. And even after having worked at movie theaters, I still leave my stuff in the seats sometimes. So I don't have the empathy that I should for having worked in those sticky shoes myself. So I don't have a fancy reason why it's my favorite. I think a lot of times we have music that sticks out to us. Our favorite things is because that music is conjoined to just a very powerful or unique memory that we have in our life. And so maybe the same is for you. Maybe you have music that means a lot to you. Who knows? Maybe the music that really speaks to you is the theme, the theme song for the Council of Trent podcast, which if you remember my talk with Nick a few weeks ago, last Free for All Friday, I picked this music because it reminds me of me. It's hopeful, it's bright, it's fun, and it resembles the 80s and is kind of cheesy. I think all those adjectives kind of describe yours truly a lot, and I hope they're helpful. I hope the podcast is helpful to you and that you enjoyed this time we spent together. So enjoy the good, the true, and the beautiful God has made for us. I hope you guys have a blessed weekend, everybody.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.